she came from Providence, one in Rhode Island, where the old world shadows hang heavy in the air. She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee, just as her father came across the sea.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. And Teddy Roosevelt once said, do what you can with what you have wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to episode number 71 of today's Survival Show. And if you're tuning in for the first time, you're going to find that this is a practical show. I'm a voice of reason. I don't get into a lot of paranoia and not a lot of tinfoil hat type of thinking. I just stay rooted in common sense. We talk about everyday ideas to help us thrive today so that we can survive tomorrow. We talk about common sense stuff, that what we do today matters and it affects tomorrow and it helps us live better right now. And if a disaster does happen, then we can respond from a position of strength. So, again, thanks for listening. This is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2010. But you might not get a chance to listen to this until tomorrow, which is Wednesday. Because, as usual, I am driving. For those of you who don't know or maybe are kind of new listening to this show, I drive about 45 to 47,000 miles per year. I'm in sales. I cover two states. I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Today, I'm driving up to Tulsa, Oklahoma to do a little business. So I also try to bring you episodes of today's Survival Show and fill up my windshield time. So today's topic is going to be about eating healthy. And this is a topic that I don't hear discussed a whole lot in survival circles. Once in a while I see posts on different forums about it, every once in a while a podcast here and there, but you know, the old saying is you are what you eat, and that is very, very true, and I'm going to talk about that as I drive down the road drinking my organic fuel energy drink. This is a new gluten-free energy drink that I found at the health food store, all organic, all natural. I'll tell you a little bit more about it in the show. And I'm also eating my gluten-free, no MSG added beef sticks. I've gotten rid of my pork skins, folks. You know, when I drive, I gotta admit, I like to eat junk food. But because of what I'm gonna talk about today, I can't eat much junk food anymore. I finally had to quit eating the pork skins. For various reasons. Anyway, I'm going to miss those things, but I found some good replacements. And as I talk about healthy eating today, I'm going to talk about a specific challenge called gluten intolerance or celiac disease, which is what I have. And I'll explain to you a little bit more about that. Even if you don't have celiac disease, even if you are not afflicted with that problem, and folks, consider yourself lucky if you don't have that problem. What I'm going to share with you today, you may want to consider eating in a different manner anyway. Survival is all about staying strong and healthy. And it's more than just working out. It's eating. You know, as I mentioned in other podcasts, when I lost a lot of weight a couple of years ago, I did it mostly with diet. And I didn't use magic pills and magic potions and things like that. I did it the old-fashioned way. I ate more and I exercised more. That's right, I ate more, I ate more often, and I ate more healthy foods, and I ate less of the unhealthy foods, and I didn't gorge as much, and eating a lot of meals a little by little was the key. But now I have to concentrate more so on what I eat because of the condition I have. So maybe this show is going to help you. And again, even if you don't have the condition I have, maybe it will still help you adjust some of your eating. If you want to lose weight, if that's your goal, if you want to reduce your amount of carbohydrate intake, that might be your goal. And today might also change your way and change your thinking about storing food. I have to store food completely differently than a lot of other people that are storing survival food because of my condition. A couple of announcements that I want to talk about and get out of the way first before I dive into the main topic. The website, todayssurvival.com, check that out if you haven't. I have some other resources on there and some other pages that you might find helpful. If you have not become a member of our forum, I'm going to start a thread about today's topic. Probably tonight or tomorrow. So if you want to talk more about it, if you're a person that shares my condition with me, or even if you just want to learn more about eating healthy, I'm going to start a thread. So join our forum, todayssurvival.com/forum. Or if you're on the main page at Today's Survival, just click the forum button and that'll take you to where you need to go. And the other announcement that I want to make is if you'd like to support Today's Survival Show, this is not a full-time business of mine. I don't intend to make it that way. This show strictly survives on donations from listeners. Some of you have been supportive, and thank you. Thank you very much. These podcasts will always be free. This is a hobby of mine, folks. I enjoy doing this. I have a lot of fun. I learn a tremendous amount from doing this show. So this helps keep me on track. But if it helps you, you find it in your heart to send a small donation over, that would be appreciated. There is a donate button on the front page, and that's all I'm going to say about that. I don't like to be real commercial, and so let's kind of move on to the main topic. Let me talk about celiac disease and what it is and give you a definition, because some people are a little bit confused as to what it is. About a year and a half ago, I was having some challenges, mainly gastrointestinal challenges. And folks, some of the symptoms of having celiac disease or gluten intolerance, some of the symptoms are not fun to talk about, okay? Let me just put it this way. I had a lot of bad gastrointestinal problems. And I think if you use your imagination without me having to get detailed, I think you can figure out what it is, okay? Especially problems with the lower intestine. And I'll pretty much leave it at that and leave it to your imagination to figure out what some of the problems are. But the definition of celiac disease, it's spelled C-E-L-I-A-C. That's how it's pronounced or spelled in North America. Celiac disease is an autoimmune disorder, and it occurs in the small intestine. And typically, people are genetically predisposed. My father has it, and I just learned that I have it about a year and a half ago. And my son, we recently had him tested. He doesn't, but he could develop it later. It's something that people can develop later on in life. So it pretty much hits people of all ages. Unfortunately, a lot of kids have it. And I'm telling you, folks, you know, there's nothing worse than a kid that has to deal with celiac disease and gluten intolerance. I mean, it's bad enough when you're an adult. Folks, let me tell you something. Getting celiac disease is like a death sentence if you like to eat. I'm serious. I mean, you just can't believe what I have to go through and how I have to control my eating. When I get done with today, you'll learn how much stuff has gluten in it. Gluten is a protein. Gluten's a protein that's commonly found in wheat and barley and some oats. Okay? Think of everything that has wheat in it. Think of everything that has barley in it. That's right, I had to quit drinking beer. Had to switch over to wine once in a while. I don't drink a whole lot, folks. A couple drinks a week, very occasionally, but had to switch over to the wine. You know, but what I'm trying to say is there's so much stuff. Processed foods are full of wheat. Even, folks, even medications, even supplements, even over-the-counter supplements, even prescription medications have gluten in there as a binding agent. Gluten is a protein, and for people like me that have the disease, my body has a hard time breaking down that protein. And so the problem that it causes for people like me is that when I eat something, my body, if what I eat has a lot of gluten in it, my body has a hard time processing the nutrients of the food. Now, think about a stink hit the fan situation. Think about a situation where food is in scarce supply. Okay, what is going to be available is probably going to have a lot of wheat in it, a lot of gluten in it. And unfortunately, I can't eat that. So I could be in a greater world of hurt than the ordinary person. So when I store my food at home and when I put food in my bug out bags, I have to be very careful that I make sure I put enough food in there for me to eat. Now, my wife and my son don't have this problem, thank God. So I can store normal food for them, and I can store things with wheat in it and barley and stuff like that for them, but I have to keep my food storage separate. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about separating those in a while. But anyway, it's an autoimmune disorder, and it's caused by your body's reaction to the gluten protein that is found. And when your body is exposed to it, the enzyme tissue modifies the protein, and the immune system does what's called cross-reacting with the small bowel tissue, and it causes an inflammatory reaction. And inside the small intestine, inside your small intestine, are little things called villi in the lining of your small intestine. Little things called villi. They're the little I don't even know what you call them, but it's what helps you actually. It's what helps you digest and break down the food as it's going through your small intestine. And what happens is when your body is intolerant to gluten, it develops what's called villus atrophy. And the villus atrophy of the villi inside your small intestine, having trouble with that word for some reason, interferes with the absorption of nutrients. Now, this can also cause you to get pretty sick. And one of the worst things that could happen in a stink hit the fan situation is getting sick, because, you know, you're probably going to be under stress anyway. If there's some kind of a disaster hits, the spread of disease could start and could accelerate. And so for people like me, I have to make sure that I'm absorbing my nutrients, and I have to probably make sure of that more so than anybody else. If it's a short-term disaster, if it's something that's only going to last a week or two, and of course we don't always know how long it's going to last, but if it's only a week or two, I probably could get away with eating some gluten products. Everybody's intolerance is a little bit different. People that have this, and you know, folks, there's a lot of people that have celiac disease and don't know it. A lot of them have not even been diagnosed with it. A lot of autoimmune disorders are misdiagnosed. Many of them are gluten intolerance. Many of them are celiac disease. There's only really one surefire way of getting diagnosed. It starts with a blood test, first of all. And you can go to your family doctor and you can request a blood test for celiac disease. They test to see how many antibodies you have and how many antibodies that's in your blood. And if those are over a certain level, then the next step is an endoscopy. And I went and I had the endoscopy done, which is basically a biopsy that they pull out of your small intestine. And then they'll test that and they'll come back with a definitive yes or no whether you have celiac disease. Now, there are different levels of gluten intolerance. Mine's somewhat low. And I notice when I get off my diet, and folks, this is a tough, tough diet to stick to, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit later. I notice when I get off my diet that the longer I'm off my diet, of course, the more the symptoms increase. But I can get off of it for a week or two. So if it was a small-scale disaster, if it was something only a week or two, I could probably get away with it. But folks, you know what? This means I really can't eat most MREs. There are very few MREs out there that don't have wheat or some kind of gluten protein in them. It means that even some of the Mountain House meals and stuff like that, a lot of those I can't eat either, because one of the first ingredients, if you read the ingredients on that, says wheat. When you have celiac disease or gluten intolerance, you really learn to become a good label reader. Man, I have to read ingredients. I have to read every single thing on there. On my iPhone, I have two websites. One of them is celiac.com. I've got that stored on my phone. And celiac.com, for those of you who don't have celiac disease, look at that website. I'll link to it in today's show notes. There are some excellent information on there and about what has gluten in it and what does not. And I have to basically look at a product, read the list of ingredients, get on my iPhone while I'm in the store, go to celiac.com and look at the list of unsafe ingredients and match it up to see what's on there. Now, there are a lot of stores out there selling gluten-free food. And one of the blessings, I guess, of having this disease is it is becoming more and more, what am I trying to say? People are becoming more and more aware of it, let's say, for example. Society is becoming more aware of celiac and gluten intolerance. It's tough going out to eat, folks. It's tough eating at restaurants. Most restaurants do not cook gluten-free. And one time somebody told me, just ask the cook if they have anything on the gluten-free menu. So I asked the waitress, I said, could you ask the cook if there's anything on your menu that's gluten-free? And the waitress gave me a very, very strange look. She had no idea what I was talking about. So she went to the cook. She came back and she says, he doesn't know. And it's tough, folks. There's a lot of restaurants out there that don't cook gluten-free, but more and more of them are starting to wake up to it. There's some good books out there. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, the lady from The View, if you know who she is, she has a book out called The Gluten-Free Diet. I think it's what it's called. The Gluten-Free Diet. Anyway, it's on order. I've got my copy coming to me. I've been mainly perusing the web. There's just a lot of good information on the internet. A lot of good blogs out there, too, about eating gluten-free that I frequent quite a bit. Okay? But I would urge you to visit celiac.com. Now, I want to mention something. If you suffer from a lot of abdominal pain or cramping, if you suffer from a lot of bloatedness and just overall indigestion, even mouth ulcers, things like that, you might want to have yourself tested for celiac disease or gluten intolerance. That's kind of how my symptoms came about, and that's some of what, those are part of the symptoms that I experienced, and of course, my father being diagnosed with it made me much more likely to get it, and sure enough, that was true. Irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, often that's misdiagnosed as well. Sometimes that's simply celiac disease. Now, there really is only one cure. You know, at first when I got it and when I found out my father had it, I thought, well, okay, what medicine can I take? There is no medicine. A gluten-free diet is the only cure. It is a curable disease, but a gluten-free diet is the only known and foolproof cure, basically. And folks, one of the problems is that if you have this and you don't do anything about it, you do increase your risk for small intestine cancer and colon cancer, and also lymphoma of the small bowel. So that's not good stuff. This is serious stuff. You got to pay attention to this. Okay, so hopefully that gives you a little bit of an idea of what celiac is. Sorry if I seem a little distracted there the last 30 or seconds or so. I had to maneuver around some semi-trucks here on Highway 75 as I get up here into Oklahoma. Anyway, let me share some things with you about food storage and how mine has to differ from a lot of other people. And again, you might want to think about some of this stuff anyway, even if you don't have celiac disease, because it just, you know, gives you overall better eating and more healthier lifestyle. And if you store what you eat and eat what you store, which is what, that's the philosophy that you should follow, then let me give you some tips for food storage. One of the things that I have to watch out for with celiac disease, of course, is the type of grains that I store. And even oats is out of the question for me, because the problem is a lot of times the oats get cross-contaminated with other grains that do contain gluten. So beans, I store a lot of to keep my fiber level up. I have to make sure I keep my level of fiber high. Okay, corn and rice are fine for me. So corn and rice have become my best friends. Most of the rice flour-based foods I have no problem with. And so I'm learning to cook more, and my wife is learning to help me cook more with rice flour and corn flour. It really diminishes the taste. Boy, I tell you, some of the celiac, some of the gluten-free foods don't taste very good. Now, they're getting better. A lot of stores are carrying some pretty tasty gluten-free stuff. Near where I live in Frisco, Texas, there's a store called Sprouts. And Sprouts is kind of expensive. One of the things that becoming gluten-free does is it really makes you watch your pennies. I am not as good as I should be yet of grinding my own grains. And by the way, if you grind your own grains and somebody in your family is gluten-free, don't grind the gluten-free grains on the same grinder as all the other grains, because they will get contaminated. It's impossible to get that grinder completely clean. Okay? So you got to have basically two separate grain grinders if somebody is gluten-free. Has to be gluten-free. But Sprouts, for example, in my area, carries a lot of better-tasting gluten-free foods. But in general, they are more expensive. Now, let me also mention something you might not know. If any of you have celiac disease, buying gluten-free foods is tax-deductible. Found that out. Save your receipts. All the gluten-free foods that you buy, save your receipts. Get your doctor to write a letter saying that you have celiac disease or that you have to keep gluten-free. You may also want to keep gluten-free even if you don't have celiac disease. And if your doctor is wanting you to do that for some reason, have them write a letter, keep it on file, provide that with your tax return. And I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but it is true. It is tax-deductible buying gluten-free foods. So at least I get a little bit of a financial benefit from that. But Sprouts has some tasty stuff, and that's been good for me. Potatoes are no problem. Problem with potatoes, though, sometimes is obviously they're high in carbs. And so I've got to watch my carbohydrates as well. And some folks that have gluten intolerance also become lactose intolerant. That's one of the side effects, so forth, I guess, that happens. You become lactose intolerant, so sometimes you have to watch your dairy intake as well. Now, I like to sprinkle cheese on some of the gluten-free foods that I eat because they don't taste very good. But then again, if you're lactose intolerant, you don't even have the luxury of sprinkling cheese on there as well. So then you got to get real creative. Okay, but getting back to foods that you can store, in addition to potatoes, yams are good, peas, and beets. And a lot of those are excellent to store if you need to maintain gluten-free or if you just want to. One of the things you have to watch out for is avoiding some of the additives that are found in dehydrated foods. It's hard for me to purchase dehydrated foods and store them for me. I can store them for the rest of my family, but for me it's tough because they add a lot of chemicals and they put additives in them. And some of the additives in there also contain gluten. Even sauces. Foods that contain sauces, I sometimes can't eat. A lot of sauces have wheat. A lot of them are wheat-based. Barbecue sauce, a lot of those are wheat-based. I have to try to find gluten-free barbecue sauce. And, of course, foods that are already produced and foods that are packaged. You know, when you have a celiac disease like me, you'll learn to stay away from a lot of packaged foods. And as far as storing food, I have to be careful. I store a lot of canned meats, and I read the labels very carefully. If I find organic canned meats, most of those do not have the additives that have gluten in them. Canned fruit, even though the canned fruit is high in corn syrup and high in sugar, that doesn't bother me too much as long as I eat that on a limited basis. What's nice about a lot of canned fruit is that it does not contain gluten, and so if I read the labels carefully, then I can get away with storing those as well. Now, I have two separate storage areas in my home. I use those big, huge Rubbermaid plastic tins or plastic bins, whatever you want to call them. And I would suggest that you, those are convenient ways to store. If you are going to do that, I have my own plastic tins that say gluten-free, and I've marked them very clearly gluten-free. And the reason you want to do that is because in a stink hit the fan situation, when people are stressed out, you want to make it very easy, especially if you have people that are at your house, and if somebody has come over after the storm or some kind of an event, if they've come over to support you and they're helping you cook. You want to make sure that it's very easy for the people helping you cook to identify what's gluten-free and what's not. So very clearly mark your storage containers. Mine are very clearly marked, and then, of course, the storage containers for my wife and my son's food, those are just unmarked, and they're just in regular containers. Now, I have some relatives that are good at canning. I'm not very good at canning. I know there's some people on our forum and some people who listen to the show that are. People that do some canning for me and give me canned foods, some of them know that I have to be gluten-free, so sometimes they'll give us two cans of an item, one that'll be gluten-free and one that's okay for my wife and son to eat, and of course we clearly mark those as well. Now, let me talk about rice for a minute. Just about any rice is okay, and if you want to keep gluten-free, then rice is going to become one of your best friends. But I did some research on rice, and one thing I learned about white rice is that, of course, it's the least nutritious grain, pretty much, that's out there. When you eat white rice, it actually can deplete your body of nutritional reserves. And that's not a real good idea in a high-stress stink hit the fan situation. You know, the high stress is going to deplete you of vitamin B anyway. And, you know, if you're eating rice that's going to deplete your body of a lot of the nutrients that it needs, that's not a good thing. Brown rice is better. Problem with brown rice is it doesn't store well. Doesn't store anywhere near as well as white rice. So I'd suggest storing more corn than rice. Kind of use rice as a treat, or kind of use rice, white rice, as a break from the monotony. Of course, I can store a lot of white rice for the rest of my family. Lentils are good. Lentils are not stored nearly enough, not nearly used enough in American food as they should be. There's some excellent recipes for lentils, and lentils store very well too. And they're a very nutritional food. They're a real nutritionally dense food. So you might want to consider those as well. Let's talk about flour for a minute. There's lots of alternatives to wheat flour. And again, even if you don't have the problems I have, you might want to consider other flours besides wheat. They're a lot more nutritional. Coconut flour is a good one. Coconut flour has about a shelf life of about a year at room temperature, and even longer if you've got a cold basement. Unfortunately, in Texas, I don't have the a basement. We don't have the luxuries of having basements in Texas. The soil is mainly clay, and it's disastrous if you have a basement. But for those of you who live in parts of the world where you can have a basement, you can actually get a longer shelf life out of coconut flour. There's a lot of good things you can make with coconut flour. There's excellent recipes. Guys, if you have spouses that like to cook with flour, and guys, even if, you know, you need to learn how to cook with flour. And, you know, most of us who are survival-minded folks, we learn to cook anyway. Cooking is a skill we all need to know. And thank God, when I was a young boy, my mom taught me how to cook. You know, a lot of my preparation for celiac disease, funny thing, a lot of it happened inadvertently when I was a kid. My mom, as you've heard me talk about, believed in being organic. My mom didn't like chemicals. My mom believed in as much homegrown stuff as we could. And we did a lot of canning, and we did a lot of home growing our own food without chemicals. And so I learned about how to make my own foods and how to keep natural a lot when I was a kid. If you did not have that kind of upbringing like I did, start learning. Start reading some books on it and learning to cook and make things with different types of flour. Coconut flour is excellent. Coconut pancakes are great. They're similar to buttermilk pancakes. Coconut flour is more expensive than wheat flour, but it also lasts longer. You don't have to use as much flour with coconut flour. So really it works out to be the same. Even though you're paying more for a larger supply, your supply is going to last longer. You know, you can make fried chicken and you can bread it with coconut flour. See, I have to stay away from breaded foods too, folks. But that really sucks, you know. I mean, even on the very rare occasion that I want to eat fast food, I can't even stop at convenience stores anymore and get a corn dog. I mean, you know, and for guys that travel like me, when you have celiac disease, you learn to carry a lot of your own food. Right now, my vehicle behind the passenger seat, I've got a whole bag full of all kinds of gluten-free snacks. I got gluten-free beef sticks. Now, I store a lot of these. The prepackaged gluten-free beef sticks. You know, they're not cheap to buy, but they're excellent. They make great bug-out bag food for me. And I can eat them. And, it, you know, it's sort of like, sort of tastes a little bit like beef jerky, at least close enough. And I love the taste of beef jerky. There is some natural beef jerky out there that is gluten-free. I just have to be careful and pay attention to the source. And by the way, you have to pay attention to where the food comes from. Sometimes you might think something is gluten-free because you read the label and you say, all right, well, there's no wheat in here, there's no barley or anything like that. Well, then it must be gluten-free. Not so. Sometimes it's manufactured, the food is processed, or it's made with the same instruments and in the same area as foods that do contain gluten. So guess what? The foods get contaminated. This is part of the problem in eating in a restaurant. Even if a restaurant is making something gluten-free. Like, for example, steak and vegetables. All right, if I go to a restaurant and I order steak and vegetables, you would think that, all right, well, steak and vegetables, I can eat that, right? Because there's no gluten in it. Not so. Okay, if they grill that steak, next to some other food on the grill that does have gluten, my steak can get contaminated. Now, every once in a while, I just go ahead and order that anyway, and I take my chances. Again, my tolerance level, my intolerance level really isn't all that high, and I got lucky. But when I do eat something with gluten in it, I have to be very careful to get back on that diet for a while so that I can get my body straightened out. It's tough, folks, man. I tell you what, it makes things extra hard for me in a survival situation. But as the old saying goes, we do what we can with what we have wherever we are. And so I make the best of it best way I can. Okay, getting back to flour, almond flour is also another excellent substitute for wheat flour, and a lot more healthy, I might add. Some of the results you get from almond flour are pretty similar to a lot of flour-based bread. By the way, folks, keeping gluten-free knocks out most kinds of conventional bread. That sucks. There is gluten-free bread, but it doesn't taste very good. Okay, and almond flour is even more expensive than coconut flour. But again, you know, with proper budgeting, you can afford this kind of stuff. I also have to make a lot of changes to my condiment choices, like soy sauce and ketchup and stuff like that. You know, soy sauce, some of those condiments that you dump on Chinese food and things like that. I can't be eating soy sauce. Most soy sauce is wheat-based. And there are some gluten-free soy sauces out there, but again, they don't taste very good. So I learned to get creative, or just learn to eat things without sauce. And, you know, sauce can tend to be fattening anyway. So even if you're trying to lose weight or you're trying to cut back on some of the sugar intake or some of your calories, eat stuff without sauce. Learn to do it. Just learn to use a lot of salt and pepper. Garlic salt. I can use garlic salt as long as I buy the natural garlic salt. You got to be careful with some of those seasonings, too. Seasonings contain a lot of the gluten protein that's hard for people to digest. You have to make sure you get all natural seasonings or make your own seasoning. But see, all this, folks, even as I mentioned in the beginning of this show, this is all about eating healthy. You might want to do some of this stuff even if you don't have celiac disease. In the long run, I would say you're probably going to create a healthier lifestyle for yourself. And isn't that what survival is all about? Isn't it all about creating a healthier lifestyle right now, avoiding disease and avoiding sickness, avoiding some of the stuff that might hit us later on in life? And the older we get, the more we have to pay attention to this kind of stuff. Okay? And if you want to be on a low-carb diet, you might want to consider some of your choices as far as what you're storing and reducing some of the carbohydrates that you're ingesting. And you're probably going to have to pay more attention to proteins. So keeping things like a lot of dehydrated eggs, canned cheese and freeze-dried cheese and stuff like that. Freeze-dried cottage cheese. I love cottage cheese anyway. And I can handle some of the freeze-dried stuff. And of course, a lot of the canned meats to keep your protein levels up. There's even things that you can do like using mashed potato flakes to take the place of crackers when you're eating soup or chili. Just put some organic. I store a lot of the organic mashed potato flakes. And that goes in my chili and that goes in soup. Soup is even tough because some soup contains gluten in it, so I have to be careful. But there are homemade soups, you know, as long as I know who's making it or if I make it myself. Those don't contain gluten. And there's, of course, at the health food store, there's soups that I can buy and store that don't have any gluten in it. Another good snack, obviously, fresh fruit. You know, you learn to become a better eater of fresh fruit and fresh vegetables. And folks, again, as I mentioned, even if you don't have celiac disease, fresh fruit snacks and vegetable snacks are the way to go. You know, I mean, eat some bananas with peanut butter on them or honey, stuff like that. That's a good snack. I love that. It's hard to carry with me when I'm on the road, but at home, I eat a lot of that. Banana chips also. There are some natural banana chips, and they also make a great substitute for crackers. Now, let's talk about junk food for a minute. I love junk food, all right? And I tell you, for me, I gotta admit, I am a junk food junkie. Remember that song? I think that was back in the 70s. Anyway, I'm trying to remember now. I can't remember. If you can remember who sang the song Junk Food Junkie, please let me know. But there's a lot of natural potato chips out there. And also junk food made out of sweet potatoes. And some of them even say gluten-free right on them. So I have to buy a lot of those. Those are healthier for you anyway. They don't have a lot of the additives and a lot of the junk in them. So consider eating a lot of those and storing a lot of those. Let's talk about non-food items for a minute. Even shampoos and lotions and things like that. And as I mentioned, some of the over-counter medicines. Some of them have grain products in them. And some of those have grain products in them that contain gluten. Celiac.com has a good list of shampoos and lotions and soaps and things that I can buy. And again, I have to store those separately. I have to put those in the containers that are marked gluten-free. And I usually look for items that don't have any dye in them either. That's important when you're storing toiletries. Okay, so I wanted to throw that in there. Trying to keep gluten-free, trying to keep away from that dangerous protein even affects the toiletries that you store. Let me get back to grains for a minute. A couple things I forgot to mention. There's some good alternative grains like millet and quinoa. I think I'm pronouncing that. And also amaranth. All those three, millet, quinoa, and amaranth, those are excellent grains to store. All of these can be cooked. As a side dish, and they can all be ground into flour, and they can be purchased in bulk as flour from a lot of different sources. Most of them are on the internet. Millet would be a real good one for people to store because it stores for a long time, and I store a lot of it. With the use of oxygen absorbers and stuff like that, you can get it to last even more than a couple of years. You can also cook millet a lot like you cook rice. And so the cooking method's pretty similar to cooking that grain as well. So that's another thing I would strongly suggest. And again, even if you want to stay healthy, that's a good thing for you to consider. Okay, a lot of good blogs out there. Even on the survival blog, I found some stuff about celiac disease and gluten-free cooking. And of course, there's all kinds of people that write cooking blogs. And again, folks, you want to learn to get more healthy, just read all the cooking blogs out there. Okay? One of them that I like to look at, my wife helps me look at too, is called Frugal Abundance. And I'm going to link to that, frugalabundance.com. Okay, now I'm getting close to the time limit of this show. I like to keep these down to a reasonable time frame, but I just want to finish with a few remarks here that are just going to take a few minutes, and that is, although it may seem like a lot of what I've talked about is a curse, it's really not. It's actually a blessing in disguise, because what this forces me to do is it forces me to eat healthier. And even if you treat yourself as if you have to keep gluten-free, even if you don't, you're going to eat healthier. And in the long run, you're going to be a better survivalist. In the long run, you're going to be able to fight off disease better. So think about some of these alternative methods of eating anyway, There's a growing awareness out there in society about celiac disease and about gluten intolerance in general. There is a link between gluten intolerance and autism also, by the way. Can't be proven, but sometimes just some simple dietary adjustments can really avoid a lot of bad symptoms out there, especially in kids. And there's more foods than ever now that are gluten-free. So, you know, I think if we begin eliminating sources of the gluten protein and wheat from your house and from your daily diet, I think you're going to overall see somewhat of an improvement in your health. Now, I'm not a doctor. I guess I should have put that disclaimer out before I started this show, but let me go ahead and get that in there. I'm not a nutrition expert. I'm not a doctor, but here's what I am. I'm a person that has lived with this for a year and a half. I know there's a lot of people who have lived with it longer than me. But I've noticed a huge difference in my health, even in my ability to sleep. I have sleep apnea, and my sleep apnea has actually gotten better since I've kept a gluten-free diet. My level of good, deep REM sleep has gotten better. I get more out of 7 or 8 hours of sleep than I ever used to. And even if I only get 5 or 6 hours of sleep, I feel better. Folks, that's important in a survival situation. You know, you're not going to get a lot of sleep if there's a disaster. And if you're healthier, your overall health, your weight control, and your diet and everything, and the healthy lifestyle you've been living up to the point of the disaster is going to pay off for you if you have to go quite a while with a lack of a lot of sleep. Okay? But watch your carbohydrates, folks, because sometimes your carb loads do go up a lot if you have to keep gluten-free because you start eating a lot of stuff with a lot of high carbs in it. So kind of balance that out as much as you can. And as I mentioned earlier, just to do a brief recap, the shifting from the wheat-based survival foods to the rice-based and some of the alternative grains is a lot more expensive, but it's definitely worth it in the long run. So, in closing, I hope that I have given you some things to think about, at least in your food storage. And you know, obviously, you don't want to go through this this eating death sentence that I have to go through if you don't have to. But a couple of adjustments, a couple of things maybe here and there, adding some alternative grains, maybe cutting a few things out that you shouldn't have anyway. And you may notice just an overall difference in the way you feel. Okay, because that gluten protein is tough for your body to break down, whether you officially have celiac disease or not. Talk to your family doctor first. After you listen to this podcast, if you want to go ahead and just get a simple blood test, see what your levels are in terms of gluten intolerance, I'm sure your family doctor will run that test. Even if they don't, just bring this up to your nutritionist, bring this up to your dietitian, or bring it up to your family doctor and see what they have to say about it. There is a growing awareness out there, and I'll bet you they're going to give you a positive reaction to it. And it might be some adjustments that you might want to think about making. Combine this with a lot of exercise. Of course, exercise always helps. I've always been a firm believer that 80% of being healthy is diet. 20% is exercise. But the exercise obviously helps as well. So, folks, thank you for tuning in to episode number 71 on eating and surviving with celiac disease and gluten-free. And I hope the next time that you pull out a bag of Cheetos or corn sticks or start eating some of that beef jerky, or even if it's your Honey Nut Cheerios in the morning, that you think about good old Bob Main from today's Survival Show. And remember that I'm going to be drinking my, let's see here, it's called my Organic Fuel Energy Lime Flavored Drink, a lightly carbonated energy drink which contains natural ingredients and no gluten. And I'll be eating my gluten-free beef snacks, and I'll be eating some of my gluten-free dried fruit. Anyway, I guess there's worse things in life, and that's all I wanted to say. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 71 of today's Survival Show, where my goal is to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to on your own terms, eating healthy and setting ourselves up for better health, better stamina, and better survival in case disaster hits. And as Teddy Roosevelt once said, do what you can with what you have wherever you are and strengthen your resolve. Thanks for tuning in, folks, to episode number 71. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.